Blog Talk Radio. All right. Good evening. Welcome once again to Madame Perry Salon. I am your hostess, your groove mistress, spiritual advisor, Madame Perry, but you can call me Jen or Jennifer or JP. I am just happy to be here with you. And, pause a moment. You know, people have asked about the transporter and the doorman, but they just don't seem to be wanting to think he's on vacation. So it's me talking to you, saying thank you so much to everybody. First, let me say thanks to everyone who is subscribing, whether you subscribe here on Blog Talk Radio or Apple iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Last.fm, wherever you subscribe to podcasts. Thank you for subscribing to Madame Perry Salon. Also, some people have been on Stitcher and on the Stitcher page and left a review for the show, and I thank you so much for doing that. I really appreciate it because of the fact that you do follow the show, you download it, you share it with people. That helps me continue to get great guests like I've had lately, well, like I always have, like I've got coming up and like I've got tonight. Last night was fun. It was Jimmy Mack. He's got a PhD in metaphysics and a doctor of divinity. He was here working on us last night. And also recently we had Franny Goldie. She's written many, many hit songs for people like Jody Watley, Diana Ross, Pussycat Dolls, the Commodores, talking about her clothing line, FrannyGoldie.com. If you go there, and now that she's a clothes designer, her clothes have been featured in Oprah and on The View, go there, buy something, buy some magic pants or buy whatever you want, and put MPS for Madame Perry Salon there for your discount, and she'll give you a special discount just for listening. And week after next, I've got Sage Nicole coming in. Now, some people know Sage Nicole. If you've listened to the band The Regrets, it's a great band, and like the last 4 or 5 years, they've been traveling around the world to every major music event. They've been on Kimmel, Conan, Jimmy Fallon, all the major TV shows. Sage was the bass player, backup singer, and she's not with them now, but she's also, she still does music, but she's an artist and a model. Has a YouTube channel, and I can't wait to have her on here. She's fantastic. So many good things. But tonight, another thing about tonight's guest is I love it when people send me texts and go, how'd you get this guy? What? What did you do? How did you get this guest? Well, sometimes you just have to ask very, very nicely, and I did. I am such a fan of this man's work, and so excited to have him here. He's a regular contributor to Mad Magazine. That he's a cartoonist, writer. He's written for National Lampoon, SpongeBob Comics, Playboy, American Bystander, Split Cider. He's got a collection of cartoons, a book called Damn It, I Swallowed Another One. Ain't It Cool News called him the dark side of the far side. And I'm going to tell you a few more things about him. But first, I'm just glad to have him right here sitting beside me in the genie bottle. Kit Lively. Kit, welcome to Madame Perry Salon.
Thank you so much, Jen. I really appreciate it. That's a very nice build-up. And I'm afraid I can only let everyone down at this point.
Oh, well, give him a little time. You know, don't let him down yet. But I'm him down. You're just pulling my leg. I am just so happy to have you here. And also, I read something. I gotta find out about this. You have a superhero secret identity, which I guess is not so secret if I found out about it. The quilting bee. Who is the quilting bee?
Do I? I wonder if that's I have actually done some superhero spoof stuff for a couple places, so that might be something that I admittedly write probably like 20 to 25 jokes a day, and so sometimes some of them get past me. So that might be one of my fake superhero things that I've done. So not quite as dark as my history gets, but.
Bob, how long did you write? I find sometimes people in these creative arts or the writers or so forth start writing and drawing cartoons as a kid in school. Were you always funny?
I was class clown for a while, and then when puberty hit, that kind of threw me for a loop, and that's pretty much when I started instead of being funny out loud. When I hit prepubescence, for some reason it really clammed me up, and I was suddenly very very shy and very passive. And so in order to still get my stuff out there, I began to make little magazines that were sort of my versions of Mad or National Lampoon, which were probably my two biggest inspirations. And so I would just do my own homemade versions, and I would usually just make one copy. And instead of selling them, I would just pass them around at school. And if they didn't get taken up by a teacher, which quite often they were, they would usually be returned to me by the end of the day. And then I would begin to work on the next month's issue.
All right. That sounds good. Did you make any money off of them?
No, at that point, I mean, I would put a price on them, but since I had one copy and I just had made one copy by hand, I couldn't really sell it. So luckily my parents were still supporting me at that time, so it wasn't as much of an issue as it could have been later. But I had like a 50-cent, price on the cover, but I never sold it. I would just pass it around to people and listen to them laugh, and that kind of, the prepubescent version of getting one's rocks off, just from hearing everybody laughing at it.
So it probably made you quite a popular guy. I guess I'm thinking about, the writer Jackie Collins.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's what she said she used to, when she was in school, from around sixth grade on, she was already writing, her erotic, racy stories in school, and she would write them, and she would charge the other students, all her classmates, charge them per page to read it. If they wanted to get to the next page, they had to pay her again. So,
see, I was never much of a businessman. I think I was probably, I needed those laughs too much, and I couldn't pretend that I didn't.
The laughter is a high, isn't it?
It really is, and it is a quite an addictive one. It's sort of like the opiate of emotions. Yeah,
that's I did stand up for a while, and that's the thing. Yeah, it's like a good night, like it, but a bad night, there's no death like that, like a death on
no, and there is a lot of rejection and the writing side of it too, but I mean even that you sort of get used to, and even a rejection is preferable to, to no reaction, to just tossing something out there, to the void or whatever.
What was the first time you published some of your work was published or bought professionally? Where was that, and when, and how old were you?
That probably would have been in my late teens, early 20s. I had been self-publishing as I continued the self-publishing model that I came up with when I was in fifth grade, and kind of kept doing that until I was in college, and I was the editor of my college humor magazine. And we got banned from using the school facilities after the first issue, and everyone was complaining about the content. So I decided, well, I would start my own humor magazine and just sell it, you know, through like a zine. You know, this was in the 90s when zines were kind of all the rage. So I thought, I'll just make a humor zine. And I did fairly well with that. And then other places began to just, you know, take stuff from my zine and use it in their small press publications. And that sort of just led to, you know, the bigger places and humor magazines. And I guess probably one of the first places was Joe Bob Briggs had a humor magazine at the time called We Are the Weird, which was based on his spoof of We Are the World that he'd gotten in a lot of trouble for. And so instead of meekly bowing down, he, of course, just named his magazine after the one thing that had gotten him in a lot of trouble. And he used cartoons and small pieces of humor other than his writing, and he started to publish me in his magazine.
Great. All right. So people were already getting you. I mean, you knew that your sense of humor found its audience, was finding its audience already in school and then college and so forth. So how does that feel when you know you found your people? Because, and I'm asking this because now everybody says, you know, when people are writing a book or they're coming up with a promotion or whatever, or a proposal, they'll say, you know, they always ask, well, who is the book for? Oh, well, it's for anyone that can read. And you know, it's not. I have a blog of essays. I can't write stuff like you do, but I have a blog of essays, true stories of my life, and it's called Memoirs of a Misanthrope. And these are the stories that actually, you know, happen in my life. And I just learned to realize that, hey, these scenarios are put around me, and they really are funny, even if they're frustrating and weird. And I started sharing them. But then sometimes people would comment on the blog, that's funny, or do you carry a weapon, or mean. That was mean. So I thought, okay, some people think I'm mean. Some people think, you know, I'm in danger. Some go, oh, that's so funny. But how does it feel when you find your audience? And do you think is there a certain type of people that are Kit Lively fans?
Well, I mean, it's always a mixed bag because, I mean, yeah, it is nice to find people who want to publish your work and who are willing to pay you for it. And when you get, you know, nice emails or letters or whatever from people who've enjoyed your work, but it's never just all that. I mean, even as a kid, when I was producing material that I consider, especially now, to be fairly innocuous, I, you know, grew up in Texas. I'm still in Texas, which, you know, baffles me to no end. why I'm still hanging out here, because people in Texas made it clear that I wasn't welcome here from an early age. I was constantly being told that my work was, you know, going to have the fires of Hades licking at my heels, you know, before too much longer, and had, you know, and these were adults, you know, talking to a child and saying, you know, you need to go home and pray. And things like that. And again, fairly innocuous stuff, you know, maybe some, you know, boob and fart jokes or whatever. which, you know, eight, nine, 10-year-old boy, I mean, that's, you know, pretty standard. And even today, you know, you get people who are offended, or some of the political cartoons that I was doing recently for Mad Magazine's blog, where they run a lot of political stuff. The people in the comments, you know, yeah, this is too dark for Mad. You know, how can Mad publish, you know, something like this? So, I mean, there's always going to be people who like your stuff, and plenty of other people who don't. And it seems like it's sometimes the latter who are more free and easy with disclosing their opinion. So, I mean, it's as far as who would be in a, I would think that, I mean, I'm hoping the answer is not, you know, serial killers for people who would enjoy my work. But probably just anyone with an odd sense of humor, or someone who likes seeing, you know, stuffed shirts, you know, getting the tar pounded out of them. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, you know, it took me a while to realize you were serious about adults where you grew up, you know, saying that your stuff, you know, you're going straight to hell.
Oh, sure.
I thought you were just kidding at first, but you're serious. You know, then again, you know, you want to just, you wish you could have just said, you know, well, heck, shame to heat up all that room and nobody be there.
Right.
I'll meet you there, kid. I'll bring the good chocolate, you some crackers, okay?
Yeah, it seems like it might not be a bad place, you know. But most of my friends are going to be there too, so I'll make it work.
Hey, I've been going to hot yoga, so it shouldn't be that difficult.
Exactly. Just pace yourself.
How hard is it? Because I guess it would be kind of ghosting. How hard is it to? Or what means do you use to switch personas, whether you're writing for Mad or SpongeBob Comics or Playboy or Weekly Humorous? Well, how do you switch personas when you're writing? Because I know it's what you write for SpongeBob is in someone else's voice, the characters.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it comes from a very similar place. Because most of my work is a variation of a few different kinds of I don't know if you want to say themes or just types of humor. I tend to like things that are bizarre and dark and off color. And so most of these places that I work for kind of can be covered by those different types of humor. But then when it comes to something like SpongeBob, and I'm also working on a kid's book right now, a kid's humor book, but still a kid's book. And really what's involved in something like that is probably the biggest change of voice. And usually when I'm working on something that's for a younger audience, instead of just totally changing my voice, I just sit down and write like I always do. But then when things get, you know, too ugly, I just pull back. So I'm still able to be, you know, odd and peculiar, maybe a little gross, maybe a little offbeat, but I know where to stop. Whereas if I were writing something for Mad or Weekly Humorist or something, I know that I can keep going. But if I'm writing something for SpongeBob or anything for more of a younger audience, I just know when I have to kind of apply the brakes a little bit.
Gotcha. One of my favorites, and like this, and Weekly Humorist, I like the advice column, Dr. Kit Lively.
clearly a man with a lot of credentials there.
I like somebody. Sometimes when I read, I was reading and I thought, okay, some of this sounds like Dr. Phil, actually. Do you write for him as well?
Dr. Phil and I have never been in the same place at the same time, so make up your own decision as to what that exactly that means. You know, come to your own conclusions.
Like the, especially the, let's see, one of the, whenever where the somebody, my husband's a golfer, he comes home wearing different pants than the pants he left the house wearing and all this stuff. And then signed by Paranoid and Annoyed. And then down at the end of Dr. Kitt's response, it says, as my aunt Corvillarist used to say, the lizard won't drop, but the corn is already spent for winter. I thought, my God, that's very Dr. Phil. So.
But it's still, I think after all these years, it still holds true. You know, that's what I've always tried to live my life by, and then so far, you know, I think it's turning out pretty well.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's new one on me, but I will take that to heart. I'm not going to say
it.
That.
Just try it. You'll see.
You know.
It's not for everyone, admittedly.
Okay. When did you start to write for Playboy?
I actually, truth be told, and maybe my mom will be relieved to hear this, but I only got work into Playboy once. Now, my experience with Playboy goes way back, but as far as actually getting some work in there, it was just one cartoon, but I figured that was enough for me to slap it on my resume, because this was right before they stopped using cartoons, and I was like, well, I got my foot in the door, only for to lose several toes when they slammed it shut. Got one in right before they stopped using them. So.
But you got, yeah. Well, glad you got it
but
in
I
there
got
before.
In,
you...
So it counts.
Yes, it does. It does count. is your mother listening now? Is she here? I don't know. I don't want to.
I usually don't tell her till after the interview, so that just in case I say something horrible, because she's a very conservative, God fearing woman. So I wait until after the interview so that I can edit, you know, her own version, you know, her own 3-minute version.
Okay. By the way, if you're listening to us live tonight, and this is August 6th, 2019, talking to Kit Lively, hilarious writer, cartoonist. I've been a fan so long and glad to have him here. And if you want to call and talk to him, the number is 646-716-9922. That's 646-716-9922. Or if you've got something, a comment or a question, and you can't call in because maybe you're still at the job, or you've got to be real quiet or something for some reason, then you know you can always message a question to me either on Facebook, either through Jennifer Monette Perry or the Madam Perry Salon page, and I'll definitely get it. But yeah, Kit's Kit. I'm pretty sure he knew he was going to take some calls. So yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So give us a ring.
I can talk to people in small doses without you know, crawling back into my shell.
Okay. when you do, I see a lot of, when I was looking for different photos to post in my, on the page here on Blog Talk Radio, I find pictures of you at conventions and with your loyal followers. And how many conventions do you do a year?
I don't do as many as I used to. I would say these days I've actually gotten it down to where I'll do maybe a couple. I got really spoiled a few years ago when there was some local guys who did a Mad Magazine centric show, and it would just be usually like a day or two, and it was I mean, there were other guests, but it was mostly just Mad guys, and so, you know, get a lot of Mad guys in the same place at the same time, and the shows were fun and hanging out with the other guys who were Mad the night before and the night of, you know, even more fun. And I think I just got so spoiled with how fun those were, and they stopped doing those like around a year or two ago, that other shows just have not been as fun. You know, you're just kind of sitting there, and it's awesome when people come up and want to talk to me and stuff, but a lot of shows, you know, are just, you know, dead air. I'm not you know, a cast member of Arrow or something. So I'm not going to have, you know, swarms of people around me 24/7. When you're not there surrounded by the other guys for Mad cracking jokes and so on, it just wasn't as much fun anymore. So I still do them, but I think that those Mad shows, ruined me. I'm a ruined man now.
Hey, talk about Mad Magazine. What's happened? Why did they quit the original content? And I saw, as people were lamenting that announcement, I saw somebody on Twitter said, "Okay, all you people whining and complaining about Mad Magazine cutting off, you know, new content, When's the last time you bought one? You know, this head, which is
about that's true.
If you're not buying it, and my answer is, last month, I bought two, because I bought one for myself and one for my 25-year-old nephew. So.
Well, see, okay, you're out there doing the good Lord's work. So thank you. Good for you.
Yeah. So why that? And that last issue, I mean, that was great. There was one piece in there by Jim Gaffigan and his son, and there was, you know, so much good stuff in there.
It's, you know, it's really puzzling, and you know, circulation has been up, and we had been getting a lot of really great publicity. And of course, the thing with you know, being in the new Quentin Tarantino movie, that has helped a lot. So it was kind of an odd time to pull the plug. It might have just been coincidental with it happening at the same time as being in the Quentin Tarantino movie. But you know, I'm just as puzzled as anybody, and there hasn't been a whole lot of official word, you know, from the powers that be. It was just kind of like, well, here's what's happening. And of course, we were all told, you know, by the editors of what was happening, you know, it's kind of like, oh, well, that's, you know, that's kind of it. We're the magazine, as we know it, at least, is currently ending. And so we all got our official emails and everything, but there wasn't really a whole lot to go on. And even now, you know, we're just kind of pulling bits and pieces from various, you know, news stories. And of course, we're talking with each other. And, you know, some of the guys will hear something from someone else, and then the rest of us will all talk or text about it. So we're all, I think, just kind of finding out along with everybody else. I mean, I'm sure there are people with who are more privy to the nuts and bolts of it, but the writers and artists and so on, we're just kind of like, you know, holy crap, what happened? When, you know, things were, you know, were seemingly not only doing well, but, you know, but seemingly, you know, doing better. So yeah, it's a bite the big one moment for sure.
Yeah, seriously. And we're upset. And then, there were, you know, I've seen a few people ranting, raving, you know, on social media about, you know, well, you know, bring it back or whatever. But do you think there's any chance of that?
I really think that MAD as a brand name, you know, or a comedy icon, is probably never going to go away. I mean, I really doubt that DC Comics, who owns MAD, and then, you know, go up the chain even further, Warner Brothers, who owns DC Comics, are going to get rid of something that has such name brand recognition and so much appeal to so many people. Even if they weren't buying the magazine anymore, maybe they would, you know, go see a movie. MAD Magazine presents, you know, such and such, you know, Raunchy Rascals Part 2 or something. Like, that probably sounds too much like an adult film, which I certainly don't think that MAD would promote adult films. Well, the writers will watch plenty of them, but I can't see the magazine actually promoting it. But, you know, something like that, something where they could slap the name on something. As far as the magazine, I mean, just in my personal opinion, I would not be surprised if X amount of years down the road, they, you know, decided to, you know, reboot, they're always big, or maybe do something where it's, online content that seems to be, you know, the thing to do these days. I know that, The Onion, of course, was always an online feature, but they also, you know, had the newspaper version, you know, the little periodical that they stopped doing ultimately, but then they kept, you know, doing it online, and I think they've been successful with that. So perhaps something like that, and again, that's just pure speculation, but to me, getting rid of MAD is completely would be like getting rid of, you know, like Batman. It's just, It seems unthinkable, you know. I mean, maybe the format, you know, the way of delivering that content will change, but I would be really surprised if it were gone forever, even the magazine. Did I lose you? Hello?
So, Chuck, talk to us about Fizdale being the Knicks' new coach. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I'll tell you right now, Ernie, it don't matter who gonna coach this team. They don't got no talent on
you
it. And I don't really feel I talk.
That's kind of harsh.
I don't feel I talk about the Knicks right
now.
You
wanna talk about lunch?
No. What would you like to talk about, Chuck? See, Ernie, I've been listening to a podcast called Madame Perry Salon. And I think Jennifer Perry, she's a great host. I mean, she got all these bestseller authors, Rostov, all the comedians.
What about people that don't have rings?
Here we go again. Real funny, Chuck. Real funny. But I think she's great, and I think people would love her show. She got a great laugh. She make the laugh come out of nowhere like an eagle come in there and just steal the whole show. It's a beautiful thing. It's not terrible.
Hello? 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 Hello?
Yeah. sick? Will I have a bet? Or do I mean that I do not? I went on WebMD and saw 100 things I do got.
Final 15, with Kit Scarlet Fever 2. Flesh eating bacteria and also the swine flu, what the mines and the measles, the clap and the shingles.
Hi, this is Kit. I cannot get to my cell phone right now, even though it's in my pocket. So please leave a message, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Thank you so much. Hello? Hello? Hello?